We'd Like a Word.
Welcome to part three of this episode of We'd Like a Word on designing book covers with me, Paul Waters.
And me, Stephen Colgan.
With our special guest, Mark E. Cobb.
My wife has just shouted in. What was the statistic there? Oh, it was the M6 toll. Well, we had the break there. My wife was doing a bit of research, and there's apparently 2.5 million books, and it was under the M6 toll. It's not the M1.
Nothing.
Now, Mark, we can't leave this discussion without the big artificial intelligence elephant in the room. Yeah. AI's been in discussion a lot. We had Ajay Chowdhury on, where he was talking about possible threats to the writers of books from AI. And just today, there was an author telling her story about how someone used AI to write a load of books in her name and put them up on Amazon. That was automatically picked up by the algorithm and put into her Goodreads account as books she'd written. And when she tried to get the books taken down, Amazon initially came back and said, well, we can't because there's no breach of copyright. You haven't got a copyright on your name. And apparently there's been all sorts of legal wrangling going on. AI does seem to be a little bit of a threat. How are you guys in the design and illustration side of things feeling about this? Because we're seeing AI-generated book covers already.
Absolutely. Of mixed quality as well. I listened to a great podcast called The Creative Condition, and it's run by a guy called Ben Talon. He's a very accomplished illustrator. And one of his points was that AI is threatening image makers now. Even if it's regulated, the trend isn't going anywhere. So if you're an image creator in a certain style, it's about adapting and fortifying your work to a more immediate threat. And I use the word threat quite seriously. For art directors and designers like me, I think there's less of an existential concern and more a call to integrate AI as a tool with kind of integrity and wisdom. Good practice with copyright and images has always been a thing. I've always operated with origin of an image and licensing in mind. You just have to, you should anyway. But now it's even more important. Personally, I'm not really happy with kind of scrubbing the internet for AI images without some kind of assurance, like a curated image source that the AI might be working from. Some libraries do it, for example, Shutterstock will, or Getty don't allow AI images in, for example. So there's an industry consciousness that's growing. I've spent protecting everyone involved in a cover, and I'm not going to stop now just because a robot's come along and decided to try and do it better. Sci-fi has been predicting that stuff for decades. Ben also, he spoke about, you know, the bespoke quality in what creatives bring to a project, that enduring, the singular humanity in an image maker's practice, the isms with their work, or the ability of someone like me to balance factors that can't be measured in code or binary. It's much like everything else. If you can mass produce something, there's a threat there. If it's more bespoke and your response is specific and it can't be replicated, or it's very difficult for it to be done, I think there's a measure of safety. But until things are regulated or an attempt is made at regulation, we'll see all these controversies. You know, there was the Sarah J. Maas cover published by Bloomsbury UK, where there was a wolf on it. It was beautifully done and then augmented by an actual human. Whoops, we didn't know, and continued. There was the photographer, was it the Sony International Awards
recently? Yes, the one who won.
Yeah, they submitted the winner and then went, hold on, it's an AI, which is a real thought starter across general press, let alone the creative press. There was that weird extra foot on the Bradford Literary Festival. Do you remember seeing that?
That's right, yes. There was a lot of moans about that at the time.
There was an extra foot, which I found great. Well, not entertaining, sorry, that sounds awful. So I think there's a massive threat there. I think in the interim, before there's any regulation, if there is regulation, we've just got to be kind and full of integrity and use it as a tool, because I think in the middle level of what we do, to that fast food point earlier on, it will find its place. Like I don't use AI in what I do yet, but I probably will. It's a tool, and I think if we can tame it, it will have its use, but don't do it at the expense of someone's livelihood, and everything else will centralize. So we've got to meet it. There's lots of interesting blogs out there about sort of new thinking. There was a designer I know called Michaela Alkino. She was designer of the year in 2022, really gifted. And she did a beautiful piece on LinkedIn about us kind of leading the discussion rather than going, oh no, AI, quick, change everything. So I'm mature enough to integrate it into practice and let clients lead and listen to authors. I don't want to do a knee jerk and go never, because it might find its place, and it already kind of is.
Yeah, it tends to be. I think we're probably more at the McDonald's end of the scale rather than the fat duck end of the scale. I mean, as we were discussing with Ajay, there will always be a market for fine art. There'll always be a market for the gallery space, etc. You know, and the Grayson Perrys of this world to go into a gallery or go into museums and collectors will want to pay millions for. It's more the sort of jobbing artists at the sort of the coal face, as it were. The people, I mean, I've already heard of some people who do colouring books moaning about the fact that they've lost sales because they're cheaper.
Yeah.
And but people don't seem to be overly concerned with the quality of the fact that, you know, the barbarian or the sorceress they're colouring in has got six fingers, you know. They don't seem to bother about that because it was cheap.
I was really quite startled then when Ajay was saying this is the cover of his most recent one, The Detective.
Yeah.
And that was designed by Dan Mogford. The publisher commissions him. And it's really nice. And the series, various different colours as the series evolves. And Ajay was saying, yeah, but he's going to keep doing it. But I was just having a little fiddle with prompts on Midjourney, and I came up with these three covers for book number four.
Mm-hmm.
And they all looked really good. I thought, that's a bit of a threat. If genre authors,
yeah, maybe.
If you can get it quickly, cheaply, Ajay's background is in tech. But I was thinking that is scary in terms of taking a significant slice of work out of the book cover designer market, potentially. Yeah.
And how do I feel about that? Actually, I feel okay. This thing is not going anywhere. It's going to integrate in some way. And I'm just going to stick to what I said earlier, which is that the more bespoke will endure. Each cover I work with is a birth of sorts. Each one is like sort of having a kid. They come into being and you have to nurture them to a level where they can go out in the world. No AI will ever be able to listen to an author's feelings, balance that with a certain scene in the book or your own prejudice almost with a certain subject or conditioning. You know, my art is as much balancing the human factors and the practical factors than it is producing the actual image. So I take your point about Jen put a running man down an alley and put some big typography on it. Fine. I've seen examples of that done too. But the more bespoke you go, the less AI will impact, at least in the short term, in my opinion. Until it knocks on my door quite directly, I'm just going to be client-led, author-led, not cross any lines, not neglect any of my suppliers. I protect them as much as I do the authors.
You said it's like having children, these covers that you're designing. Which is your favorite child?
Which is my favorite child?
We all have one, even if we say we don't.
Good question. And I think I'm going to say that I don't really believe in favorites. I do have really ones that I've loved that I've done recently, but favorites of all time, I just can't possibly say one's better than the rest because there are so many meanings, so many different things. But to give you some stuff, there was one I did recently for Unbound called The Secret Life of Lego Bricks. And it was a large format cloth bound volume, not for sale. So no kind of commercial kind of considerations, really. I worked with Lego directly, Unbound directly over months. And it was the first book for adult fans of Lego, which is the abbreviation is AFOL. So all these AFOLs were going to spend 50 quid on a Lego book. It was an absolute joy. It was an archive of original Lego material aimed at these people for the history and the type of brick and the specs, all this kind of stuff. And dare I say nerdy, it really was specialist stuff. It wasn't, you know, done to death in that market. So it was a chance to have fun. And The Secret Life of Lego Bricks. And what do you think the Lego bricks do in their spare time? It was like, what's behind it all? After getting lots of ideas out of my system, which was like stacking books to make actual bricks, it was mental. I came back to a very subtle idea. And all we did was cloth bind the book in a pure red, a Lego red, which is a specific color for that. And then we debossed a brick. Photography on it, nothing else, no author going, I want my name bigger. It was just a debossed brick. It was such a beautiful riff on the secret word in the title that it was a designer's dream. So if there's a recent favorite, probably that one. It got picked up by various sort of pieces of press and it got nominated for a nonfiction design award, which was great and helped me on the way to designer of the year nominations, which was just a real privilege. And so that one of late was brilliant.
Handy for stacking too.
Handy for stacking. I went through Stephen. Like stacking books, let's do it.
Yeah, absolutely. So is there a particular book or a book series that you'd love to do the cover to?
Yeah, already had the chance. So about 10 years ago, I got to pitch for the entire Roald Dahl backlist.
Wow.
It was the publisher came to me of an evening and I had to have it ready for the next morning. And even though I was kind of proud of the work, So if there's ever a lesson in life, it's to, you know, allow time for it. But yeah, I was gutted there. I missed out on that and the entire estate. I mean, not only would the money have been incredible, but the chance to package my childhood hero author, you know, and now my kids, would have been absolutely brilliant, you know. And I was unhappy for a while, but learned a lot from it. And I've since worked for big estates like McCall Smith and his series and his last book, which was just an honor. I'm working for Ian Fleming Publications, things like that. So it's gone on, you know, the likes of Lego. I mean, how lucky am I? So yeah, Roald Dahl, tried, missed it.
Where Paul and I live out here in Buckinghamshire, we've got the Roald Dahl Museum just down the road. Literally, it is 10 minutes from where
Amazing,
I'm sitting.
Isn't it?
And have you been there? You must have been there. Yeah, it's just great fun.
Which brings us to the end of part three of this episode of We'd Like a Word with book cover designer Mark Ecob. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
You've been listening to We'd Like a Word with me, Paul Waters.
And me, Stephen Colgan.
See you next time.
Bye-bye.